What's up, everybody? It's Chad. I'm back again with another episode of Ask Chad Grassy Logic. This week, I'm here with my buddy Colt DeMorris. Thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks, Chad. Thanks for having me.
Heck yeah, man. I'm glad you made that little drive up. You know, thanks for doing that. You know, it's been a couple weeks since I had an in-person guest, so it's kind of nice to, you know, have someone in the studio with me, because the past couple weeks I have people from remote that had COVID, and yeah, it was just the whole, you know, fiasco thing. So thank you for joining me. Today we're going to be talking about a few things, but first, you know, we'll just get started off in the episode. We'll talk about Colt DeMorris. So you and I, you know, have a lot of history. You know, we tackle a lot of cannabis stuff together here in New Mexico,
for sure.
Even in the Texas, you know, El Paso area. I used to even, you know, attend, you know, some of your normal meetings back in the day. You know, when I was a part of the New Mexico Medical Cannabis Patients Advocacy Alliance, I can still say it, when I was a part of that group and everything. So, you know, it's been a long time. So, you know, for the people who don't know, could you share a little bit, you know, about who you are, you know, where you come from, your background and all that?
Definitely. Well, I mean, it all started back in 2009. You know, I watched my mother, take her last breath, from cancer. And, when that happened, you know, I never wanted somebody to feel the way I felt or have to go through what she went through. So I started my journey on educating myself on cannabis. I knew at the time that, you know, cannabis could help patients that were going through chemotherapy eat and stuff. But then I started coming across a little bit more research showing that, you know, people were beating cancer with cannabis and stuff like that. So I wanted to dive into that, started reading medical studies and the like, and I started educating people on Facebook. You know, a couple years into that, I came across Dallas-Fort Worth Normal. I knew what Normal was. I didn't know there was little chapters everywhere. And I came across Dallas-Fort Worth Normal, and I went to look for an El Paso Normal. And when I did, there wasn't one. So I felt that was an opportunity to give El Paso a voice, mm-hmm. in the cannabis reform fight. So I founded El Paso Normal 10 years ago in January. We just had a 10-year birthday. And ever since then, it's been about educating the public, you know, trying to keep people out of jail and get medical patients access in my state, in my community. I started in the New Mexico medical industry in 2020. And ever since then, you know, I've been helping patients in my community that spans not just El Paso, but, you know, Southern New Mexico, get and gain access and keep it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that, you know, was, especially during the medical days, was really important, because we had to do a lot of outreach because people just didn't know we had a medical cannabis program in the first place.
Right.
And that's one thing that I learned, you know, during my advocacy time, trying to help the vets get their cards. I'm like, we can do that. And I was like, yeah, like, but I have VA. And I was like, I do too. And they're like, oh, so yeah, you know, so I'm glad that, you know, we were able to kind of work together in tandem, you know, with that kind of, you know, mission and everything. And, you know, I guess I'll, you know, talk about this now. I want to talk later on the show, but you were the first out-of-state patient in New Mexico, correct?
So when we talk out-of-state patients, we think reciprocal patients.
Yes, of course.
I wasn't a reciprocal patient at first. I was actually a hard card New Mexico holder. They messed up on the law and wrote it to where anybody that was a person could access and
a resident.
I challenged, you know, there were others that challenged it too, but I challenged the wording of the law and definitely was able to get into the New Mexico medical program as a Texas resident.
Yeah. And that lasted for what, 3 years?
Yep.
3 years. Expired what, almost 2 years ago or a year and a half ago?
October 22 is when my card expired.
Yeah. Well, no, you just, you know, reciprocity, you know, helps, but you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was an interesting time. But yeah, you know, they messed up one word and, you know, that changed everything. You could have been from, you know, Djibouti and, you know, you could have got your medical cannabis card in New Mexico so long as that you were a person. So yeah, that was an interesting time. And I kind of wanted to just bring that up because, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, like a lot of people don't know that, you know, happened in the New Mexico medical programs. We had a short, it was maybe not even a year, huh, that they had it until they changed it. But they allowed people that were here already grandfathered to stay in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was about a year. And then when they changed it, that's when they kicked off the reciprocal program.
Yeah.
At that, and even then, you know, they left that open.
Yeah.
Really loose. You just needed a doctor recommendation. You know.
Yeah.
So anybody who's getting a doctor recommendation from anywhere.
Yeah.
And that let a lot of people in. But then they finally changed it, tightened it up, where it had to be, you know, you had to have proof from the governmental regulatory authority of the state that you were in. So, yeah, it's been a nice little
little transition change. Yeah.
Nice little path.
to where we're at now, you know, because now anybody with a medical cannabis card can use it here. I mean, there's still a little process that you have to go through. But luckily most places are, you know, trained on that. Because I know at the very beginning, there was a lot of places that didn't know how to do that.
They didn't know how to do it. They were scared to do it, you know. In the beginning, because, you know, a lot of states were able to show cards.
Yeah.
Texas doesn't issue cards. So there was no way to prove by the regulatory, the government authority in Texas that you were in the program.
Yeah.
That was until, you know, I came across a printout from the DPS. That's actually who runs the medical program in Texas, in the Department of Public Safety, which, you know, is a far cry from the Department of Health.
Yeah, yeah. Not much better.
So now we're able to, you know, and it's tricky to get those papers, but now we're able to get those documents and the state of New Mexico approved them.
Good, yeah. So, and now, you know, it's a learning process, you know, where the industry itself for adult sales hits 2 years on Monday, you know, so we're barely getting there. So, you know, usually year five is when we have like a more stabilized kind of industry,
right.
You know, looking from other states, you know, New Mexico might be a little sooner, might be a little later, but, and depending on what else is going on, you know, the possible rescheduling, you know, or descheduling, you know, if Texas happens to just get a wild hair up its ass and go legal, you know, several things could happen that just, you know, would change things significantly here. But let's talk about the work you've done, actually, you know, the advocacy side. Let's talk about that for a minute. We'll jump back to, you know, all the other stuff, because those are cool conversations. But I really want to, you know, pinpoint, you know, all the stuff that you've been doing, not just, you know, New Mexico wise, but Texas, you know, like, you know, you've done kind of jumped both, you know, like I only kind of work with, you know, the El Paso stuff, you know, I kind of in the area, it's kind of like a sister city kind of thing. So, you know, what affects them affects us and vice versa.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, what have you done for, like, in New Mexico wise, you know, advocacy wise?
Advocacy wise, you know, just helping patients that weren't able to get into the program, get in and stay in the program, get access to, RSO for patients. Mm-hmm. One of the big things that, you know, we didn't do it last year, but the prior 2 years, myself and stepdaughter Bennett, who, you know, you had on a couple episodes ago, every year we would donate oil to a patient, in memory of her mother, my wife that had passed in 2016. So it's little things like that, you know, assisting patients where we can.
Yeah.
New Mexico wise.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll jump over to
actually, and I guess there's a little bit more, you know,
there you go.
We did, and we've done it together, you know, a lot of work in city council here in Las Cruces, fighting for, you know,
yeah, we got the 24 hours.
We got the 24 hours. Yeah. You know, no, that was pretty cool. And trying to not have them tighten up on an industry that doesn't need tightening up on right now.
Yeah, you know, because, you know, the industry is so young, and then there's just not enough data to really back, like, you know, cracking down on it right now.
Yeah, we don't need overregulation. That's when bad things happen.
You know, overregulation just causes too many issues. You know, it'd be great if, you know, we would kind of regulate ourselves, self-regulate, you know, ourselves here in the industry. You know, if someone's messing up, like, hey, stop fucking up. You know, how can I help you get to regulation, you know, to regulatory, you know, so that way you don't get shut down or you make us look bad, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, unfortunately, that hasn't really been going on. Maybe in the future, you know, there's chances for that. But, you know, if that doesn't start happening, they're just going to start creating more laws. And they kind of tried to do that this year with, like, the drive-through thing. You know, they tried to pull that little thing under us. It wasted so much time during the 30-day session. You know, it was almost just like a speed bump. You know, and then you end up with that. And so that's one of the things that, you know, we have to be really persistent on. But, you know, for New Mexico, we could talk about that for days. You know, let's talk about Texas. You know, you do a shit ton of stuff in Texas. You know, you go to the state legislature over there, which is significantly farther for, you know, for you than it is, you know, to go into Santa Fe for us. How far is that drive anyway? I mean, I'm sure you fly.
Yeah, the drive is about 10 hours, about 10 and a half hours to get to Austin. I do fly just because, I mean, it's a time crunch.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I don't blame you.
But yeah, I stay involved in Austin at the Capitol. We try to do it. So Texas has a legislative session every other year for 6 months.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we're up there every other year at least. I'm always involved with my representatives locally. the guy that has spearheaded cannabis reform in Texas, Representative Joe Moody, he's my representative. And I got him on board. You know, actually, we're about at the 10-year mark for that. Right after we kicked off Normal in January of 2014, you know, I thought to myself, well, I'm about to go tell the public that they need to get involved with their representatives. They need to contact their representatives. So I need to do the same. And I did. Joe Moody sat down with me and we had a talk. And at the time, Washington, D.C. was going through a decriminalization process where they had a bill that would turn anything under an ounce into a civil penalty of $100.
Yeah,
that's it. I took in that bill at our conversation and I told him, look, if it's good enough for our nation's capital, it's good enough for Texas.
Yeah.
And he looked at the bill and he's told me before, you know, he walked out of that meeting and called his staff and was like, give me a good reason why I shouldn't file this bill.
Yeah.
And nobody could. So that bill has been filed, you know, it was written for Texas law and has been filed every year since 2015. He's done so much on that front, trying to, you know, end arrests. And, you know, over the years he's progressed to now, last year he filed a, legalization bill. Mm-hmm. The legalization bill didn't, you know, didn't have any movement really. But it did make a big advance. It was read in committee. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, they have to draw up a report of what the bill would do to the state's budget. And now everybody sees just a hint of what money is being missed out on the state.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're making that advance. I think we're still a long way off from that. But I've, you know, been involved locally with city council many times. You know, I was going for about 2 years straight every meeting, working on cite and release. Mm-hmm. It's something. It's not the answer, but yeah. You know, it's to start, and it keeps people out of jail for the most part. I mean, we're still having a lot of arrests in El Paso, but we got that through, seen through the finish line, and yeah, man, I stay involved with the people that represent me in my area because they're going to be the ones that can change the laws, especially when it comes to Texas drug laws.
Yeah, I mean, they're you know harsh, as we all know, that you know even taking a pen down there can get you a state felony, you know, which is harsh on any means, you know, even edible, they weigh the whole thing, you know, so yeah. If you have a, you know, a half pound or quarter pound, you know, brownie, they're going to charge you for a half, quarter pound, half pound of, you know, cannabis, which is ridiculous because most of what's in there is sugar and flour.
Definitely. We had a kid, an 18-year-old kid in Texas get caught with a plate of brownies.
Oh, I remember that.
They weighed everything and, you know, he was looking at life from brownies.
Yeah.
He didn't get it. He got 10 years probation. But, I mean, just even consider your whole life ruin over brownies is ridiculous.
Yeah. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I have to tell people, too. You know, my friends who use cannabis from other states, you know, that I've met throughout the years who moved or whatever. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to Texas. I think I'm going to take my pen. I was like, do not do that. Yeah, like, what? I was like, don't. Yeah, you know, like, there's other means when you get there, but you just don't. That's not even worth it. So, you know, a lot of them have listened luckily and they're like, yeah, dude, they're pretty strict. They're looking. I was like, yeah, they look for it, dude. It's not like they're, you know, like laid back about it really. They're looking. So
it's a game to them.
Yeah, it is. A little, you know, cat and mouse game for them. They're like, ha ha ha.
For sure.
And so, it's unfortunate, but you know, luckily, you know, people like yourself exist there. And of course, you know, a couple other advocates that I've had the honor of meeting through, you know, through you that, you know, from Texas, some of them came down for the first sale. Freedom Mexico. I remember that, you know, the first night we had our first sales. And so that was cool to meet them and, you know, kind of the differences of the advocacy work from different states. You know, it's always the same, but always different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Every state has their own main concerns, their own, what they're trying to do, their own way to do it. Because Texas, you have to do it a weird way there, you know, because of the politics,
yeah.
You know, the way the state runs. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, every other year you were there. So, you know, can you elaborate a little bit on that? You know, how often does Texas have its legislative session?
Yeah, so it's once every other year, odd number years, and they only meet for 6 months. So it's bills start getting filed December, the year prior to session, and session kicks off in January and ends about the end of May.
End of May, damn.
Yeah, so it's quick. I mean, yeah. And there's thousands and thousands of bills filed. So
it's a big state.
For sure.
And it's not, you know, it's not just El Paso that's incorporated. It's the whole state that they, you know, that they do this in. So yeah, that's millions upon millions of, you know, people that are being representative through this, you know, not like just New Mexico, it's 2 million people, you know, but and even us, you know, we have a 30-day and a 60-day session and we barely get stuff through sometimes, you know, sometimes like even with our, the Cannabis Regulation Act, it took a special, you know, session to get it passed. You know, we couldn't get it passed. I think it was in a 60-day session. There was a lot of filibustering, don't get me wrong. But you know, we couldn't get it done, but that's what it took. So sometimes, you know, it feels like you have a lot of time, but you have, you know, especially when it comes to legislative stuff, you know. So where do you see Texas, you know, going from here though? Like, you know, do you see them legalizing here soon or maybe waiting until the federal government does something, you know, like where do you kind of see them?
Well, while we have, you know, the top three in power, Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and his name's skipping my mind right now, but those are really the two biggest ones. While we have them in power, you know, things aren't going to go far.
Yeah.
We had, so the bill that I had talked about earlier that Joe Moody filed, over the years it had changed. You know, he filed it initially for that $100 fee. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, legislators brought up, hey, well, who's going to pay the filing fee of all this? So it went from $100 to $250 civil penalty. Well, then him and the last election cycle, Governor Abbott and the one that was running against him, Sheriff Lupe, I can't think of her last name right now, Sheriff Lupe, she was out of Dallas, though, mm-hmm. Who was running for the Democratic ticket of governor. They had a debate, and Governor Abbott came out and said that he would support dropping cannabis to a Class C misdemeanor. So Joe Moody rewrote the bill, you know, tailored it to what the governor would support, and the lieutenant governor, you know, who's the president of the Senate, just kills everything.
Yeah.
So he's a really big problem. The Senate hasn't really made too much movement because of him. We've gotten things passed out of that house, like that bill. But when it gets to the Senate, it disappears and dies.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the sad part. And that's the crappy thing about, you know, working with politics and law stuff is you run into those issues and it's freaking heartbreaking. You know, it's like loss after loss after loss, you know, and, you know, like here, you know, we finally got a win, but it took us so long. And, you know, and unfortunately for Texas, but fortunate for us because we are, you know, making a lot of money from it, you know, here in New Mexico. I think over half of our sales come from Texas. You know, so that's one reason why I do talk about Texas a lot is because what they do affects us. So if they legalize it at any point, that's going to affect the New Mexico market heavily. You know, we made $1 billion within less than 2 years. You know, that would have been possible without out-of-state help, you know, like that. There's only 2 million people here. You know, and if you look at most sales for people's, for their sales, the medical sales are down here and the rec sales are up here. So, you know, there's a big disparity when it comes to those sales anyway. So that's one reason why I want to keep you guys informed of what's going on too. Plus, you know, in the end, you know, all of us around the whole nation, around the world should be allowed to use cannabis, whatever substance we really feel that'll help us with whatever, especially if you talk to your doctor about it. You know, there's times where people use fentanyl, you know, with their doctor's clearance. You know, I had a couple of vet buddies who had a fentanyl sucker. He told me he had a damn sucker that was fentanyl. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if it's okay with your doctor, whatever, you know, whatever use case, you know, but, you know, that to me was a little crazy. But, you know, I feel that, you know, everybody should have access to cannabis, you know, especially people down in Texas. You know, it's a big state. That's a big market. And once you guys go legal, you know, that we'll see how things change for Sunland Park because they kind of got popular overnight, you know.
Definitely. You know, once Texas goes legal, it's going to hurt Sunland Park.
Yeah.
You know, I was just on the news with the mayor and the chief of police out in Sunland Park, and they're saying like 80% of their traffic out there is Texas.
Yeah.
Texas plates.
Yeah.
So once a move like that is made in Texas, it's definitely going to hurt the whole state.
Yeah.
The whole state.
Oh, yeah. You know, the whole state will
Hobbs,
feel it. Yep.
You know,
Hobbs, Carlsbad, you know, Clovis.
Yep.
You know, all those areas will feel it. Jowl down to Eunice, you know, those areas, super southeastern New Mexico. You know, all those places will really feel it because, you know, they're making a lot of money right now. You know, like those places like Jowl and Eunice, they're very tiny towns, but they're next to a lot bigger Texas cities, you know, that are closer to them than their own state capital. You know, so these people are going to, you know, take that little hour, 2 hour trip, whatever it is for them. They're going to go get their cannabis just like they do here. You know, so, yeah, once that happens, you know, it's going to change things night and day for Sunland. And that's why I'm telling people now, you have to figure out a way to keep the Texans here now, and of course in the future, because you want them to stay here and keep spending money. And so I guess that's one reason why they started doing that, pretty much that adult playground that they're going to be making, like the adult amusement park. I forget the name of it. It's changed a couple of times. And so that should help, but I don't know if that's the answer. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's the full answer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they already have a casino racetrack. They already have an amusement park down there, you know, and those aren't enough. You know, maybe this last thing will be, you know, the thing that it needs, but we'll see.
You talking about the amphitheater?
They
got that coming too.
That's true. They are getting an amphitheater too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Sunland Park is building. That's why I call it Little Dubai. They're building all kinds of crazy stuff down there. You know, stuff that you wouldn't expect Sunland Park to have. Because that, like, adult theme park thing is going to be on down by the river and everything like that.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. You know, just as good as I do, they want to build, like, a whole river walk down there.
Yeah. A whole thing, which is cool. You know, I love that for them.
Yeah.
You know, I just hope that they can do it in time. They execute it well, because we're on a time limit, you know, like maybe 5 years tops. But if they deschedule, reschedule, which I think is going to happen this year, that could change it. Because Texas has a trigger law, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
But it still has to be approved.
Okay.
There is some kind of head that approves it. So even if they were to deschedule, I still think that Texas may keep it illegal for the time being.
Until they, whatever happens.
Yeah.
Which that's a little ridiculous, but, you know. Because, you know, New Mexico, we have a trigger law here, but that's only for, you know, interstate commerce. You know, if we want to say sell to Arizona and vice versa, it just takes, you know, two governors of both states agreeing, you know, once that happens. But that's the only trigger law we have. And for Texas, that's great. But at the same time, you know, you have that person that's in charge that probably isn't going to say yes, you know, which I could see that for Texas, you know, which is unfortunate. So for the time being, you're kind of stuck with the legislature, huh?
Yeah. And yeah. That would be like if it's descheduled, you know, if it's rescheduled, who knows what route it's going to go. It's going to take it and put it in pharma's hands. And basically, we're already set up for that in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, everything's prescribed. It's not recommended like every other state in the United States. So we're kind of set up for the rescheduling, which is kind of scary, because it's going to take it out of, you know, everybody. It's going to take it out of the general public hands, unlike every other state.
Yeah. And that's interesting how, you know, how it might work over there. Because, yeah, you're right. Here in New Mexico, it's a recommendation. It's kind of considered a prescription, but it's not. It's a recommendation. So that's cool that they actually went that route and gave it an actual prescription. So it makes also sense why it's a little harder to obtain it, you know, through the channels that, you know, versus what we have to do here. So maybe that'll change in the future. We'll see with federal guidelines and everything. Like I've been keeping you guys updated on, you know, like the rescheduling, descheduling thing. That's something that I would say probably happens before the summer, because we're in an election year, a presidential election year. And if something doesn't happen, those votes are going to get lost. And, you know, there's a bunch of chatter on that about already, you know, like, oh, whenever something happens, you know, the numbers fluctuate up, you know, whenever something positive happens with cannabis. And, you know, this being even started in the first place is, you know, like a huge thing. But the timeline we're on, you know, it seems like it's short. Like earlier today, too, you know, something that was weird, I guess three Republican congressmen wrote a letter to the DEA, you know, recommending that they don't reschedule and to keep it illegal. You know, it's just the boomer guys, the ones that are, you know, reefer madness stuck and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's still those people. And of course, you know, there's been talks of certain individuals in the DEA having, you know, negative thoughts and feelings about, you know, doing it too. So we'll see what happens. You know, three things can happen, really, in my opinion. We can not do anything, you know, it can stay the same where we are right now. Then we're probably 5 years away. We could deschedule it altogether, which will change the nation's industry upside down overnight, really. And my prediction is if we go any other route of descheduling, rescheduling, we're going to end up with two different industries anyway, because we're going to have a transitional time from going from one industry to the other anyway. And then even then, some states might say, screw it, we're keeping both a 280E and then a deschedule or reschedule, whatever it may be. Because, I mean, we do that already. You know, we say, well, I don't care what you say. If it's Schedule 1, we have an industry. So what's to us to say, like, well, if they don't want to go to that side, they can stay on this side. So, you know, that's just kind of my prediction, just from what other states tend to do. I don't see a lot of them doing it, but at the very beginning, everybody's going to do that, you know, because there's going to be that point where people just can't afford it. They don't want to. You know, they're trying to figure out how to.
Yeah.
You know, the federal government's figuring out their guidelines, you know, whatever it may be. But there's going to be a point where some of us are going to be on the 280E traditional and the others are going to be on the deschedule, reschedule. So, I mean, what are your kind of thoughts on that, like descheduling, rescheduling?
Well, if any of them are going to happen, it, you know, deschedule.
Yeah.
Don't reschedule. You know, they're talking about rescheduling to schedule three. What other schedule three drug is out there that you can walk into a store and get?
Yeah.
None. Yeah. You know, and that takes it and puts it in Big Pharma's hands, which is something I'm completely against. You know, and I really my focus is I want people out of jail, mm-hmm. and I want patients to have access. You know, if the federal government leaves it to states to figure out, let's do that.
Yeah.
You know, but it does suck in the instance that, like, businesses can't get, you know, tax deductions and stuff like that. But we need to figure that out. You know, banking, we need to figure that out.
Yep.
But I'm not too gung-ho about rescheduling. You know, if we're going to do anything, deschedule. If not, leave us to fight another day.
Yeah, that's how I'm fine. I'm fine with waiting another 5 years because we already have a legal industry here. Mm-hmm. You know, and the more states are going legal every year, you know, so, you know, it's just going to go more and more. There's not much they can do about it. And the other hang-up, you know, I guess for deschedule right now is there, you know, there's a lot of, and that was actually one of the Republicans that, you know, said they shouldn't, is we're going to be going against a bunch of treaties, you know, like whatever treaties that we have with NATO or whatever. And I'm a firm believer, fuck them treaties. You know, like, I don't know how many treaties we go against anyway to start with. So, I mean, what is us to say
one
that?
More.
Yeah. And Canada and Germany and a bunch of other countries, you know, they've already, you know, legalized it already. Some, you know, Canada's had it for over 10 years now, I think, right?
Yeah.
Just about over 10 years now. So, I mean, and it's not an issue for them. So, you know, fuck them treaties, you know, let's just deschedule it and, you know, get it done with. And, you know, let's stop playing these little weird games because we're one of the most powerful nations in the world. And so, you know, why can't we just have legal weed, you know?
Yeah. And we're playing with people's lives, you know, and it's not funny.
No, it's not. You know, a lot of people are going to prison for this, you know, and some people are, you know, doing life sentences. You know, they treat you harsher for drugs than they do for killing people. That's what blows my mind. This guy murdered his wife the other day because she was cheating, and he did 5 years, maybe 10, you know, like he's not doing that very long. And I'm like, good Lord, that's crazy. He killed somebody.
Yeah.
So, you know, you smoke some weed or get caught with it and then you can end up longer, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at this new thing that came out on the Nickelodeon situation,
yeah.
You know, one of those guys that molested one of the child actors got 16 months in prison.
That's ridiculous.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And we got people for a plant in there for 10 years and more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff like that. We need to focus on victims with crimes. And take care of those and leave the victimless crimes alone. You know what I mean? The people that don't have victims or don't hurt anybody, like cannabis consumers, just leave them alone.
Yeah.
Go after the big criminals.
Yeah. I mean, there's even now with, like, you know, legal cannabis, you know, even we'll ask DPS all the time, any issues? No. You know, no issues for cannabis. You know, like, everything's hunky-dory, especially here in Cruces.
Yeah. The Sunland Park Chief of Police, you know, they haven't had many issues out there, if any.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the end of the world. The earth's not going to fall out from under our feet. And many states prove that time and time again.
Yeah, 100%. Well, man, I really appreciate the conversation and everything. Thanks for talking to me about New Mexico and Texas. You know, it's very rare that I get to do that with somebody, you know, kind of coincide both together, you know, get your experience, especially from that side, you know, especially with you working with the legislation. You know, I rarely get something like that. So I appreciate it, man. And, you know, maybe, you know, when you guys have the legislative session, I could bring you on again. We can kind of update each other and we'll see what happens from, you know, from then on, you know, to then. So we'll see. But sure. Before we move on, you know, where can people find you online and everything? Give you a follow.
Instagram, Colt DeMores, at Colt DeMores 420, El Paso Normal. You can also check out what we're doing with Texas Cannabis Collective, Astro Buds, and then my profile, Colt DeMores, on Facebook.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, man. And yeah, give him a follow, see what's going on with Texas. And, you know, you'll see him around me, you know, you guys usually do anyway. So, I appreciate it, Colt. And yeah, let's continue on with the conversation, man. We got a couple other topics to, you know, talk to you guys about before we move on. This next one, really important. And if you don't care about it, you know, there's something wrong because, you know, it's really important. So this couple of days ago, actually Sunday, a recall was administered by the Cannabis Control Division. They notified the media. The media obviously did an article right away on it. It was a very vague, short article, of course, you know, because it was done so quickly. However, they did notify the manufacturers, the producers, and everybody involved with it. However, they didn't put on any of their socials. You know, RLD, they have access to Instagram, Twitter, I think YouTube, and Facebook. I think they might have Facebook, but they have access to many of those. And if they would have shared it on that, it would have got to more people, and maybe more people would have understood versus, you know, kind of what happened. Because it was kind of a big freak out. You know, like, you know, a lot of people kind of freaked out, you know, they're making assumptions, this and that, and oh, blaming and pointing fingers everywhere. And we don't need that, guys. You know, like, this is going to happen. Recalls happen. I mean, it happens with lettuce, you know, like, let's be honest, it happens with everything.
Yeah.
You know, and cannabis isn't short of that. This is going to happen in the industry. Should it happen? No, it shouldn't happen in any industries, but it does. There's a way things are and a way things should be. And right now, I get it. We are angry because the situation that we're left with our testing, because our testing is everywhere around the nationwide, is dog shit. You know, it's inconsistent. There's too many issues. There's too much stuff going under the radar, you know, being swept under the rug and being allowed put on the market. So, I mean, I get it. We're frustrated. We can't trust it. But at the same time, you know, there's a time and a place, and, you know, there's a way things are and a way things should be. So come to find out that the pesticide that they use is called mellifion. Mellifion is just a common pesticide used. It's almost like a nerve agent to bugs, and I'll explain more of that in a little bit. This was actually processed originally in 2022, was when it was initially processed and tested. I guess the retail spot that had it decided to get it retested because I guess the test expired. And once they retested it, that's when they found the mellifion. The testing facility that tested it the first time, I guess they weren't aware that they had to test for mellifion, and they're the only ones who are now testing for mellifion and following all the regulations. So they actually found the mellifion later, and it's because that nobody else is testing for the mellifion. I think you checked before we started that, you know, they are the only one, right?
Yeah. That I can tell.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to get you guys all the information first before we go on, so that way we all know what's going on. So let me catch my breath real quick, because that was a lot of stuff to share real fast. So here in New Mexico, actually, and I'm clarifying this with the CCD, I contacted them. They sent me to their media person. I gave her a bunch of questions in an email. Obviously, they didn't, you know, reach back to me in time for the show because they hit me up this morning. But I was asking them, and I want to clarify if you can do that. I'm pretty sure you can't. I just want to clarify, you know, like, pretty sure once it's done, the sample, that's it. You got to get rid of it. You got to destroy it. You know, it's a done product. So I'm kind of wondering where that came from. I know in the medical days we did that, but like, why did it stick around for so long? If that's the case, you know, like, that's a little worrisome. You know, like, it means there's a lot of people out there getting stuff retested and just putting it back on the shelf, and it's there for 2-3 years. You know.
Yeah, I'm not a manufacturer or have that knowledge, but you know, there's a manufacturer that I had talked with you know, some months ago, and they said that nothing really changes on the concentrate, you know, after that year.
Yeah.
It's not like it's spoiled milk and goes bad. And we were under the impression that it could be retested.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that's coming out now that it can't be. And if that's the case, then that's fine. But I think what really needs to happen is all the testing places need to be on the same page and doing what they need to do.
Yeah.
Because if that was the case, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. You know, we need standardization. You know, there's some testing facilities that use one method and one uses another. And then some, we don't even know when the last time they've calibrated their equipment, you know, because I'm finding out that the CCD hasn't really been inspecting these guys. You know, one of them said that I haven't been inspected since we were medical, you know, like, you know, this is the medical days, you know, that's a long time ago. You know, 2021 is when we kind of started this transition to the adult use, era and everything. So, you know, it's been a while. And so, you know, they need to crack down on that, because that's our first line of defense, you know, like our first and last, really, you know, is testing, you know, to know what's in it. And if we don't have that, the whole industry breaks down, and the trust in the industry breaks down, then people start going back to the traditional market and getting it that way, because, you know, it's a source that they feel they can trust. But, definitely, you know, like, those issues can still exist on the traditional market. And if not, it always is, because, you know, that's where you find a lot of products that couldn't make it on the legal side going to, you know, we see it here in New Mexico. There's a lot of stuff getting backdoored, yep, you know, all over the place, stuff getting backdoored left and right. So that's where you see a lot of it anyway. So I'm always weary when someone says, oh yeah, I got some Jungle Boys, you know, I'm like, was it like something that couldn't be sold? Like, is that where you got it? Like, I'm kind of weary when I see that, you know, like, it's kind of scary. So, you know,
what's the reason they're not selling it?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, well, why isn't it? Why, they make more money if they sell it. Like, oh, what's going on here? So, yeah, but I wanted to give you guys the information of, you know, how it happened, what happened. I mean, what's your kind of thoughts on it so far? I mean, you know, what's your, you know, opinion on really what went down?
Well, from my understanding of it thus far is, I mean, just like I said a moment ago, all those testing facilities need to be on the same page and going by the same, whatever is mandated by law, they need to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the manufacturer's fault.
Yeah.
Because he did what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, if the testing facility would have been playing by the rules to begin with, this stuff wouldn't have gotten out to the public.
Yeah.
You know, what is this stuff going to do to those who smoked it?
Yeah.
And I think we need to find out who's at fault and put and make sure, you know, something happens to them for not being what they're supposed or doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. You know, because, you know, a lot of these issues, you know, stem from the grows. You know, we could usually blame the grow first, you know, and then, yeah, the manufacturer, he's just processing it. A lot of the times they send problematic material to a manufacturer to remediate a lot of those issues, because mm-hmm. you can do that here in New Mexico. You can use that process to remediate. And so that's what they do a lot of the times to remediate those issues. It takes it right out, you know, depending on the process that you use. So it'll take a lot of those issues out. Unfortunately, this time, I guess it didn't, or maybe the process they did, you know, they didn't know about it, so they couldn't pull that out with it. So that's another thing, you know, like that missed with testing. You know, this manufacturer may have or could have maybe implemented another step to pull that out, you know, or to pull it out of the material. You know,
I'm not sure
if they knew about it, you know, if they knew about it, maybe they could have done something about it, I guess is what I'm saying.
For sure.
You know, from the first. So, and I kind of feel that the CCD is to blame because of their lack of oversight, you know, like, yes, the grows and everything, but they're the ones in charge. And right now we have an issue with people not following the rules and the law. And mm-hmm. you know, that's known. And, you know, when I talk to the CCD, you know, they're like, yeah, you know, like, you know, these things happen, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, we're still learning, you know, the industry is still learning, and that I can get, you know, like, okay, I get that. We're all still learning. So, you know, there doesn't seem like they're freaking out, but at the same time, when you contact the media first, before you kind of like, I don't know, they have an email, like, mailing list for when updates happen that I get, why couldn't they send it out to everybody else? You know, cause what if I bought that and I wasn't aware of this? You know, what if I'm not on social media? You know,
well, what's going to hit you first? A news article coming from the media, or that email if you're not signed up for it?
Well, it depends. You know, if I don't have social media, I'm not going to see it.
Was it on the news itself?
It was on the news, but I was getting all of the information from social media or from people just sending it to me, you know, like just directly. So it really depends. Like, you know, I personally, I check my emails before I check my news. So I'm like, okay, let me see what I missed, or if anybody sent me an email for, you know, some whatever reason. And I would probably see it in my emails first, but that's just me. You know, like someone else, maybe they will go, you know, check the news first, you know, first thing in the morning. But, you know, I had it sent to me directly, you know, like that morning. I woke up to a few texts. I was like confused. I was like, what's going on here?
And definitely the store should be contacting whoever it was sold to.
Yeah, I agree.
Step one. I mean, if it's got to be recalled, there's an issue. And that's how you get to the patient quickest. You know what I mean? Because the ones that bought it or the ones that have consumed it is the ones you want to get to first.
Yeah. Because, you know, we don't know what this does. And actually, I will tell you guys what Melathion is. So Melathion is it's a insecticide, really. You know, it's a bug killer. You know, it just affects their nerve system and, you know, essentially paralyzes them. What it does is it overloads their nervous system with sodium. And usually with sodium, it uses it to kind of fire off and work. But if you overload it, it just stops the nervous system completely, and it just causes paralysis. And that's what this does. It tricks the nervous system to keep putting sodium into the cells, which then, you know, pretty much kills the bug by starving it, you know, eventually. So that's how these work. Now, this is in very small dosages for bugs because they're very small. They have tested this on mice. You know, there's very limited tests on humans, though. I'll keep that out there. Human testing, they're very limited on, but it's also not very highly recommended to use it. But one thing that alarms me is Melathion is found in a bunch of products, you know, certain products that you just buy over the counter. Of course, you know, it's used to, you know, in the gardens and in grows, certain grows and stuff to kill the bugs. However, it's found in lice shampoo as well. I guess it's good at killing lice. So they use it in lice shampoo, and, you know, you put it on your skin. Of course, in low dosages, they recommend it won't do anything, but, you know, it is used for that. Now, with the test that they use with the mice, I think they use 200 to 300 milliliters per kilogram of Melathion, which is a lot. So, you know, if like you did that to a human, that would be a lot of Melathion you're giving them. So that's why I'm saying the tests are really limited, you know, because the methods that they use needs to be tested more. They need to be scrutinized. They need to say, okay, well, they did it wrong here. Let's do it this way. Let's figure it out. I'm not saying melathion is, you know, not good for you. I mean, I agree it's not good for you. And there is a lot of list of things, what it could do you and what it does do to you. But the studies on it are so limited that, you know, we shouldn't be having this in a lot of these products that we have in the first place, that it's found in so much. You know, like it's in lice shampoo, which is fairly readily available. And when I was a kid, there's kids who had lice and they had to use it. And of course, you know, we were probably all, you know, subject to it. So yeah.
The big difference is that you're using that as a topical,
yeah.
Whereas the concentrates that were found to have it are being inhaled.
Yeah.
You know,
that's even worse.
Huge issue there.
Yeah. And that's one thing that they haven't studied too, is like, well, what does it do to you if you smoke it? You know, I can probably guarantee you it's nothing good,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, I don't have the data or the studies to back that up.
Right.
You know, so I can't say that with a fact, you know, with science backing what it does to you. Right. What I can assume is nothing good, and the end result is probably not good either. You know, and I'll say that it shouldn't be in our cannabis to start with, but this is what melathion is, what it does, where it's found. Like even Orkin and like the biggest exterminators of the nation, they use it for mosquito sprays and they use it for all their sprays outside. It's found within all the mixture that they use. So, you know, those guys are spraying left and right everywhere. You know, I remember, you know, in the military, they were everywhere spraying that crap everywhere. So, you know, melathion, it's all over the place, you know? So even if the grow didn't introduce it, which, you know, that's more likely a case, is the grow was the one that, you know, introduced it somehow. If it wasn't the grow, who knows where it came from? Maybe there's a bunch of spraying outside, a guy through ventilation systems, is on someone, you know, I don't know. There's just not enough study or data to tell us exactly where this came from. You know, we can make assumptions all day, but until we get a confirmation, you know, it's just going to be, you know, that just assumptions and, you know, big speculations on things. But I just wanted you guys to get a, you know, a real clue of what's going on with this melathion thing, you know, and I want everybody to get the facts, what's going on, you know, like, you know, there's certain people to blame, but there's certain people you can't really blame, you know, like if a manufacturer gets a material, and a lot of the times from my experience, manufacturers will ask you, what would you use nutrient wise? You know, would you put into it, blah, blah, blah. And if they lie, sometimes they'll tell you, well, I'm going to know, because during my process, I can tell, you know, yeah. When I pull it out, I can tell
Definitely.
What was in there. And I'm going to ask you, hey, you know, I asked you if, you know, it had this and this, because it's going to, you know, affect the end result. Mm-hmm. You know, you weren't honest with me and now your stuff's shit, you know, and it's not going to be good. So that's another thing, you know, you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not being honest with your manufacturer. It's like lying to your doctor. You know, if you're doing a disservice to yourself, because, you know, in the end, they're going to figure it out just like this. I mean, 2 years later, you know, this product obviously, I guess, wasn't moving very fast, but 2 years later, they found it, you know, and they might start looking harder. And that was another question I asked the CCD that, you know, I'm waiting for a response on, is, are you guys going to change anything regulatory-wise to crack down on this? Or, you know, what's going to be the changes that you guys think need to go, you know, going further? And I'll have to update you guys that next week when I get a response from them, because, you know, I'm still waiting. So, and this is going to be something that, you know, is ongoing. You know, the cat's out the bag, the, you know, can of worms is open, you know, like, and a lot of people are starting to pay attention more to this testing thing. And, you know, this is not going anywhere. And it's not even just like pesticides and things like that. You know, we're having issues with the high THC stuff. You know, like there's cases of, you know, places claiming that, oh, we have 40% THC, you know, and that's laughable. You know, like that you don't have 40% THC. And the reason why I say that, and I can say it comfortably, is because in California and Colorado, they have started to crack down on their testing. And those THC levels are dropping. You know, they're dropping to where they once were, you know, because people are just trying to get up on it. Oh, I want it to be 50%. You know, yeah. Who knows? We could have been to 70% at some point, you know, if they didn't step in and do something. So I feel we need to do something in that, you know, that play that area too, because if not, you know, it's just going to get really bad, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, what have you experienced, you know, when it comes to the THC? I mean, have you seen like other states or anything go like 40% or anything like that? Have you seen any of the 35s and up in the state?
I haven't. I think the highest I've seen in the state is about 32.
Yeah.
And that would be, you know, THC, not TAC.
Yeah.
I have seen a 38 TAC.
Oh, really?
So there's that. The terpenes were like at 2% with a 31% THC.
Nice. Let you guys know THC is total active cannabinoids. You know, like everything put together. So that is a, you know, impressive number, to be honest. You know, high 30% THC with a high, you know, in the terps, that's almost unheard of, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, back before it became recreational, when It was just a medical industry. You know, you had the time to educate patients coming in, mm-hmm. talk to them, and let them know that it's not always the THC number that's benefiting them, or, well, that it's not the THC number, you know, completely. That's just a small portion to it. But when recreational came about, the market changed completely. All they want is the cheapest weed and the highest THC for the most part.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could have something that says 31% on the thing, but it just be complete trash.
Yeah. You know? It doesn't taste good. Does it smoke good? Doesn't get you high at all because there's nothing else in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all about the THC. You know, THC is great for killing pain and for other things like that. But if you're trying to have an all around experience, you know, you want the terpenes, you want the good smoke, the smell, you know, you want it to have, you know, a smooth kind of hit, you know, and depending how you're consuming it. You know, you want all that to be there because, you know, it's a part of the plant. And only now are we kind of, not even now, you know, we're barely starting to figure out how to grow this plant, you know, and, you know, for it to react, because for so long we've just been crossbreeding it, you know, and to try to just up the THC, just make it as potent as possible. But now, you know, it's starting to change. You know, a lot of people are starting to focus on the terps, you know, the flavor and everything, and, you know, the real craft cannabis. And I'm really glad to see that, you know, because it's been a long time coming from, ditch weed to, you know, where we are now. So
for sure.
I just hope we can continue that, you know, that little trend and everything, dude, because, man, I hate shitty tasting weed.
Man, I had some the other day that it was a tester, and, like, I lit it, and I took a couple hits, and I can do that usually and smoke, light it back up, and it'll be the same thing. When I lit it back up, this one tasted like bong water.
Ooh.
I was like, what? I've never experienced that.
I was like, that's a new one. It's like those Harry Potter jelly beans. Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm eating dirt. Great. Yay. Lovely for me.
I was like, I haven't had that taste in a long time. It's been a long time since I've hit a bong, but it took me straight back to that memory.
Oh, all the way. But, you know, but yeah, you know, we'll see what happens with the testing thing. You know, some of these issues, you know, some people are cherry picking where they're taking their samples, and they're also cherry picking when they're pulling their samples. You know, I'm a big firm believer of that. You know, possibly the Department of Ag, because this is on the hemp side, this is what they do. They go to your farm, they take the sample for you, they put it in an evidence bag, and then you send it off to a testing facility. You don't take the sample. So there's no cherry picking at that point, you know, like, they have to pick what they pick. And, you know, people are cherry picking going to certain testing facilities because they know they're going to give them what they want versus what's there.
Right.
You know, and right. That's something that needs to change too. And that's actually what Colorado and California have done. And I'm sure New Mexico is going to look to see how they did that and kind of try to, you know, enforce it our own way, you know, because, right. You know, New Mexico does do things its own way. It's just how it works here. So
don't you think, like, your idea with somebody coming from, like, the Department of Ag and pulling the sample for you, don't you think that'll bottleneck and backlog everything?
It could, but, you know, that's where more funding and everything needs to be funneled to these areas. Like, CCD needs more funding. You know, that's why we're running into certain issues there. So I think if we fund that area, or maybe mimic what they're doing on the hemp side, because, you know, there isn't that many hemp farms in New Mexico now. Maybe mimic that to the CCD side, because I talked to the director, you know, a couple months back, and talked about how many hundreds of, you know, to almost thousands of, you know, different inspectors they hired. I was like, cool, but, you know, what about, you know, the testing stuff?
Right.
So, you know, it could backlog, but at the same time, you know, it'll just create another step to, you know, ensure that they're not trying to fudge numbers, you know. And right now, you know, some places, I don't even know if they're testing it. I don't know if they're, you know, fudging everything to, you know, put it into the system, because there's a lot of traditional market out there, you know, and a lot of the times I'm sure it's not even tested.
For sure.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, it's just an idea, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, in the future. I do think that, you know, something needs to happen from the get, from them pulling the sample all the way to the, you know, getting it tested and afterwards. So, we'll have to see, you know, no one's done it right yet. You know, people are still trying to figure it out. We're barely going into year two, so we'll see what happens in the next, you know, couple years, you know, hopefully we'll figure it out by year five.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that's all I have for this conversation. Do you have anything else before we move on to the very last one?
No, I have something I'll touch on, just reaching out to reciprocal patients after we're done.
Okay. We'll leave it at the end when I do my little bonus stuff for sure.
Cool.
So this last thing, it's really not going to take long, but, you know, this is something that I've gotten personal reports about, and it's the Border Patrol. You know, we're having a lot of problems with the Border Patrol now. And at first, it kind of seemed like they were just kind of hands off and leaving it to whatever, because, you know, we had to write paperwork and this and that. but it looks like that's changed in about the last month. So I'm getting word that there's been over 6 incidences where the Border Patrol has taken a legal courier in the New Mexico cannabis industry and taking all of their product, you know, and leaving them with nothing.
Are we talking about a courier company transporting for another company?
Just courier, you know, okay. Someone couriering, you know, gotcha. Like not for a company, but just, you know, someone, you know, doing the services of couriering.
Gotcha.
You know, they're doing it for the company or they're doing it for a third party. Either way, I've heard it's been happening about 6 times this month. Now, that's just this month so far. It could go and start happening more and more often. I have no clue. I hope it doesn't. But this is a trend that scares the shit out of me because this is something that we've feared this whole time.
Definitely.
You know, this is something that has plagued southern New Mexico and has actually made people weary of even opening up down here.
Yeah, for sure. I heard a story today about some stuff getting caught at the border, you know, legal BioTrack stuff within the state.
Yeah.
And them taking it all. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's happening more and more often. Again, it's a game to these guys, you know. Yeah. These guys feel, you know, just because they're federal agents, federal officers. I mean, technically they don't have to follow New Mexico state law, especially because when you pull off to their property, you know, you're on federal property.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these guys are just having fun, you know, taking the boredom out on us.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, these two, they're 100 miles away from any border. You know, like, cause these inland border checks, what I'm talking about, they're inland border checks. They're 100 miles from the border because the Border Patrol is allowed to do that within 100 miles. They have jurisdiction with 100 miles of a border. So they're allowed to have these checkpoints. They have them. They've all over the area, actually here in Las Cruces. I can't go any direction without hitting one. I can't go east, north, west, whatever. I hit one. Doesn't matter. So I've spent my whole life trying to visit my family, you know, run into border checks. So you have to slow down, you pull over and they ask you, are you American? And sometimes I'll start asking you more questions. And sometimes the drug dog will be out there. Even though they're supposed to be looking for immigrants, they have a drug dog out there. Mm-hmm. And they're sniffing this and then they harass patients. I've been harassed before too, searched. You know, they threw my crap everywhere, you know, treating me like I'm a hard-earned criminal and started asking me stupid questions. And, you know, they were being assholes.
Definitely.
You know, and then it was a game to them. They're like laughing in my face.
Yep.
You know, and that's not cool. You know, like that what the hell? You're playing games with people's lives when you should be at the actual border doing what your name says, patrolling the border. Correct. You know, like, why are you 100 miles inland harassing American citizens who haven't left the damn county, you know, let alone the state or the country? So that's my problem with these, is that more people get harassed than they do good for people. You know what I mean? Like, they only catch a very small amount of percentage of drugs that get through.
For sure.
Like, when you see, like, a drug bust online, oh, the Border Patrol sees this much, that means the harder shit got through. You know, or the other stuff got through already. They only bust a very small percentage, just like they only bust a very small percentage of people that get through the border as well.
For sure.
You know, so, you know, it's unfortunate that this is happening. And I'm getting word that, you know, some of these agents, not only do they get cartel pay from, you know, some of them that let the cartel guys go through, they're also getting cannabis industry pay from some of the companies in the state.
Wow.
So some of the companies in the state have broken down. I'm sure it's happened to them a couple times. And they're just like, look, we'll pay you. I don't know how it happens. So this could also be some of these agents' way of trying to get more money, because this is kind of alarming. True. How many it's happened. It's happened 6 times in a month, you know, and like before that, they were just like, whatever, you know, so maybe they know the decrim thing is coming, the deschedule, and they're still like, well, I'm just going to try to make as much money as I can off these guys. Yeah. I'm going to triple dip. I'm going to get federal money. I'm going to get cartel money, and I'm going to get cannabis industry money. Now, this is to say, guys, this isn't every agent, this isn't every Border Patrol person, but this does happen. And there's news articles on it. You know, like when this does happen and when they get busted. So that's how we know this kind of stuff is going on. And then, you know, people in the industry also tell me, yeah, we paid them off. You know, like they don't mess with us anymore. And so that's their thing. I have no, you know, whatever with that. That's how they want to go about it. That's up to them.
Right.
But, you know, it's to me alarming, you know, 6 times. And to me, that's, you know, screaming this.
Yeah.
You know,
and I've heard not even just like product having large amounts of cash.
Yeah.
And you know, some have even had like their paperwork showing that it's from the business, and because it's a cannabis business, they take it.
Yeah.
You know, so they're going after cash and products.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just seems like, you know, they're acting like, you know, thugs now, you know, and I don't know why. This came out of nowhere, you know, and it's unfortunate. It's alarming because, you know, the industry in southern New Mexico thrives on getting through that border. You know, if we can't get through that border, we can't sell our product, and then, you know, we're screwed.
Yep.
And there's not much we can do state-wise because this is a federal thing. you know, like, I don't know what the state can do. You know, that's not my area, but, you know, something needs to happen, and it needs to happen soon, because the federal government just doesn't care. You know, like, this industry, and this is for any border industry. This affects California too. You know, like, California is well within that 100 miles too on its southern border, Arizona, us, Texas. So this isn't just New Mexico that this could be happening in. You know, this could be happening in Arizona and California, and we don't even know about it.
For sure.
You know, it's just, you know, people are just starting to tell me. This hasn't even hit the news. This is, you know, straight up, you know, industry information that people that are going through this are telling me. So this isn't even in the news yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is something that I felt was important, because especially us down here, we like I said, rely on that damn border. So yeah, guys, just be careful out there, be vigilant, have all your paperwork and documentation in hand. You know, if this happens to you, unfortunately, there's really not much we can do. You know, just hope that it changes, and hope that they aren't, you know, trying to, you know, extort money from us, you know, just to get us through the border check. Cause you know, that does happen. I wouldn't recommend doing that and paying them, because that could go bad for you too. You know,
eventually it all come to light.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one thing I want to say, you know, eventually only time will tell, and we'll figure out what's going on with this. You know, if it's something like is going on with the government, there's something scarce going on, or if they are trying to get more money from us. So we'll see, you know, only time will tell. I mean, what do you have thoughts on that one?
I know that, like, Representative Ray Lotta out of the Sunland Park area was trying to tackle this issue for the state. I don't know where he's gotten, but I know it is on the radar to some representatives.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be more, and we need to figure out something we can do. Unfortunately, with the way it sits at federal level, there's not too much we can do, but there's got to be something. You know, with it being illegal, it's hard for cannabis businesses to get banks.
Yeah.
But they're doing it. There are businesses out there. There are banks out there that will work with cannabis businesses. We got to figure out some way to come to an amicable agreement to allow us to operate, even regardless of what the federal law is.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, hopefully if it comes out that these agents are accepting payment or something like that hits, you know, daylight, then it'll bring that reconsideration quicker.
Yeah.
You know, because now these agents are doing something illegal, you know, in a legal market. So
yeah,
we've got to figure out the medium.
Yeah, 100%. You know, because if not, you know, businesses are literally going to lose their livelihood, you know, just because these guys want to just have a little fun, you know, at our expense, you know. So yeah, but that's all I have. But you had one more thing you wanted to talk about the patients too?
I did. So I'm big at helping reciprocal patients get into the program. There aren't that many dispensaries that know how. They're starting to come around. But anybody, whether in Texas, New Mexico, you know, if you have another state license, Arizona, you can get a hold of me and the team at Astro Buds and Chaparral, man. We can get you in the program quickly.
Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, he means if you have your card and stuff like that, you know, they can get you the paper and all the documentation. Cause like I said, some people don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
They won't do it. Yeah.
And if you're in Texas and need to get into that program, get at me and I can definitely guide you there too, because, I got people contacting me all across Texas, to get into the program, and then to get into New Mexico's following that. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm there for the patients and so is the team. My team is well trained on getting them in and getting it done.
Cool. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, thanks for all you do in the industry. And I look forward to keeping up the fight, brother.
Yeah.
It's a long fight. All right, guys. Well, I'll see you next week. And I'll try to keep you guys updated on both of all these topics. And we'll see what happens next week. All right.